This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, bureaucrats trying to cut a life-saving judge out of the picture. We'll also hear about rising violent crime in Texas's capital city. In our interview, we break down the grassroots uprising that's taking place out in the Congressional District 11 election. Talk to Empower Texans Board Chairman Tim Dunn about that. And sometimes you get exactly what you vote for. Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan explains that in this week's commentary. Welcome to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. As always, you can find us on the old internet at www.texasscorecard.com. Early voting finally starting to get underway for the primary election. So if you haven't gone on there and checked out some of the endorsements and recommendations, news about the different candidates that are running, I encourage listeners to go check that out. With that out of the way, I wanted to get started with this week's news and go up to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, talk to Robert Montoya. Big story this week, some bureaucrats moving, making machinations, trying to pull a life-saving judge off of cases involving the rights of children and parents. Tell us what's developing up there in the Metroplex.
Yes, Tony. So last Thursday, Texas Scorecard broke the story. We had received word from a number of sources and got confirmation from an internal email from the Tarrant County Court System that this Thursday, February 20th, there's been an emergency meeting called of the judges of Tarrant County to discuss removing all cases involving CPS from the court, 323rd District Court, where Judge Alex Kim presides.
Yeah, and let's talk about Kim. So Judge Kim has been in the news most infamously as the judge who halted efforts by a local hospital to take the life of an infant, baby Tinsley Lewis. Tell us a little bit about that saga.
Yes. So last year, Cook Children's Hospital invoked the infamous 10-day rule, which allows nameless, faceless hospital committees to decide to pull life-sustaining care from patients. The terrible law that a lot of pro-life forces, including Texas Right to Life, are trying to have repealed. And they invoked on Tinsley Lewis. And at the 11th hour on the very day Tinsley was supposed to have her life-sustaining care pulled, which would have killed her, Judge Alex Kim approved an emergency injunction stopping the hospital, saving her life, and was scheduled to have a hearing to discuss whether or not the 10-day rule could actually be used in this situation.
Yeah, and immediately the hospital and the forces that wanted to take this baby's life attacked him. And now this appears to be some type of retribution for him. He has authority over child protective services cases. And the reputation I've heard is that he is actually making CPS do their job and meet the procedural requirements. And that is not making the CPS bureaucrats very happy.
Yes, it's a very interesting coalition that is formed against Judge Kim. It's not just Cook Children's Hospital, it's also Child Protective Services, as you mentioned, but also court-appointed special advocates, also known as CASA of Tarrant County. All three of these groups are rather furious with Kim because, as our sources tell us, just as you said, he's an unbiased judge who follows the law, and they're not enjoying this new situation they're having to deal with. And our sources inform us that they actually are influencing the situation behind removing these cases because apparently they have an alleged influence on Judge David Evans, a Governor Abbott appointee, who oversees all the judges of Tarrant County, and that he's the one pulling the strings on this.
And so the policy change here would be a vote by the local district judges, and that's something that, it's not like a normal case where, you kind of can't talk to judges about what they're going to do in a particular case. This is a policy change that they're looking at of taking cases away from Judge Kim. My understanding, the grassroots there in Tarrant County really rising up and applying some pressure on their local elected officials.
Yes, ever since we broke the story, the grassroots in Tarrant County have risen up and are on fire. I have learned that the phones of these judges and the phones of the court in Tarrant County have been ringing off the hook, melting down, and there's now an organized grassroots effort to try and stop this maneuver and save Judge Kim.
Yeah, well, that's great news, great developments, great for catching this story, breaking it, and we'll just have to keep an eye and see what develops. Thanks for reporting on it, Robert.
Thank you, Tony.
Now let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau for Texas Scorecard. People who live in Austin or might be making a trip to the capital city have additional reason to prepare to defend themselves, given some new numbers out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. The Texas Capitol is kind of resembling more of Gotham lately. New police numbers have shown that violent crime has been rising. Homeless to homeless violent crime rose 23% over the last year, and homeless to non-homeless crime rose 6% in the same time.
Yeah, and so this is just, you know, the crime that's actually reported, but it's all stemming from this city of Austin policy where they've basically said, hey, you know, that disaster that's going on in San Francisco and LA and Seattle on the left coast, give us a little of that, right?
Gosh, you're right, Tony. The story began back in June when the Austin City Council made it legal for vagrants to camp and sit on sidewalks, on outside businesses, pretty much any public space in the city. And so that decision immediately sparked tent cities, campsites, trash across the streets of Austin. And you immediately saw citizens just absolutely outraged at the safety risk and what was happening to the streets of their city.
Well, and so it's made Austin even more of a magnet for vagrancy and this toleration of camping and these kinds of things. Obviously, then you have drug use that then goes with it. And, you know, I think I saw yesterday or a few days ago, there was a guy shadow boxing no one in front of a building two blocks from my office. So it creates a serious risk of safety. What are people doing? What's the reaction like?
Well, there's currently a petition circulating around that has 86,000 citizen signatures calling for the city council to fully reverse their decision. Now, they did partially back in the fall after months of inaction, but citizens are still very upset, and especially recently, there have been a number of tragedies, including a homeless man stabbing and killing a restaurant manager in broad daylight. And so you're seeing increased public safety risk given these new police numbers, and people are very, very disturbed and concerned.
Yeah, well, Texans, if you're coming to Austin, prepare to keep yourself safe and keep your family safe. For people here in town, you know, it's not just trying to get the ordinances fixed. We have to do something about these problems, and that'll only happen if the politicians are held accountable. So we'll keep an eye on these issues. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, as I was saying earlier in the program, early voting is now underway, and there's a big controversy brewing in the Congressional District 11 congressional race, open race, as Congressman Mike Conaway retires and many, many candidates joining in there. And to talk about that, I've got Empower Texans Board Chairman Tim Dunn on the line. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Well, thanks, Tony. This is the district I live in, so I'm watching this unfold firsthand, so it's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, this is right there in your backyard. It's stretching from San Angelo and over to Midland and kind of all the way up to almost to Dallas and Fort Worth, getting up to Granbury and that part, but a big swath of West Texas to be represented by a new congressman. And as you've been describing it, there's this controversy there. You have one lead candidate who seems just to be running away with it from a money chase and all of that kind of stuff. And now the grassroots are kind of starting to pay attention to this race, saying, hey, hold on, maybe we have some different ideas about who we want to represent us in Congress.
Yeah, a guy from San Angelo, August Pfluger, he was in the military for 20 years and then came back to run for this seat. And he has outraised all the other candidates combined, has, you know, tremendous breadth of backing. And his military resume is well-regarded by West Texans. You know, they're very patriotic. There's four other veterans in the race, but none of them have the resources to kind of get their resume in front of people. And so I would say from the standpoint of a professional consultant looking at the race, it's like no matter what happens, it's his at this point, and looking at the polling data and so forth. But in the last week, interestingly enough, the controversy has largely stemmed from his supporters because it was discovered that a PAC came in and started funding for him that has as its major donors Democratic candidate Michael Bloomberg, as well as Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, which is a pretty famous Trump-hating organ. And so that raised a lot of eyebrows. There was a little bit of question about him because it was discovered he never voted while he was in the military. And he said, well, I wanted to make sure that, you know, everybody knew I was going to be loyal to whichever president we have. So I was just demonstrating that by not voting at all. And he pointed to some historical figures that had done that. But a lot of people were furrowing their brow at that.
Well, I mean, military people vote all the time. We go through all of this exercise to make sure we get the ballots out to our military men because we specifically want them to be participating in elections.
Well, and the critics would say, well, you had a chance. So you had a chance to vote for Donald Trump and against Hillary Clinton and said, no, I'm not going to take that opportunity. So that had raised some eyebrows already. But then when this PAC endorsement came in, then the eyebrows got any even greater.
Yeah. So this group, it's called the With Honor Fund, and they've specifically, obviously, the money coming from Bloomberg, who's now running for president on the Democratic side, and Jeff Bezos with Amazon and Washington Post, big Trump, anti-Trump guys coming in with money here, and they're specifically asking the candidates that they support, hey, we want you to pledge to work against, you know, across the aisle, work with Democrats on issues.
That's right. Their website says that they want to increase civility in Washington, D.C., and they want to support veterans. And the fund is specifically for veterans. And, of course, August Pfluger, he's not a veteran. He's still, I think, active duty somehow, technical status. But, you know, he's been in the military for 19 years or whatever it is. So he fits their claim on the website. But then you dig into the website and you see that they also donated to Nancy Pelosi and to Kevin McCarthy, who are the highest in their respective parties, and neither one of those are veterans. So then you start scratching your head a little bit and say, well, so you say it's all about civility, and yet you endorsed Nancy Pelosi. There's not much reaching across the aisle going there, it doesn't seem.
Well, and everybody just fresh off of seeing Nancy Pelosi rip up the president's State of the Union speech. It's not quite the picture of civility that that folks would necessarily support. As we look at this, so the big kind of controversy here is that President Trump has endorsed Pfluger. And you go, well, why in the world would he do that?
So that raised a whole lot of eyebrows, too, because it came on the heels of these other things. And so the question is, well, what in the world is going on? Now, this is big pro-Trump country. I mean, look, it's Midland and Odessa are the hub of the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin is now, I think, hosts the largest oil-producing area in the world or largest field in the world or something. I can't remember exactly what that is, but it's the center of the oil business. And you've got all these Democratic candidates basically pledging to annihilate the domestic oil producing.
They want to destroy everyone's livelihoods
bringing prices down with all the oil that we're putting on the market, and they want to say, no, we can't have that anymore. We want high prices and for American consumers, and all that money going to our good friends in the Middle East who are, exporting oil. So, from our standpoint, there's a lot of people who really respect Trump for being his relentlessly keeping his campaign promises, as Empower Texans has noted multiple times. And there's a lot of people that just see that, hey, we got one friend and one enemy. So it's big Trump country. So, when that happened, there a lot of people called and said, hey, what's up? A lot of the big supporters out here didn't get asked about this. And as I had suspected when the inquiries went up, what happened was that Kevin McCarthy, who's the leader of the Republicans in the House, went into the president and got a group of endorsements.
I think it was 30. I think I've heard of 30, a batch of 30 endorsements.
Batch of 30 endorsements, which in one respect is fantastic because, the House and the Senate, actually D.C. as a whole, has viewed Donald Trump as a virus. And in fact, one of the candidates we're going to talk about has a Facebook post that was removed that talks about Donald Trump as a virus, which we'll get to that in a minute. But this anti-Trump sentiment is enormous in Washington, D.C., and I'd say it went over to the House and Senate because he's disrupting business as usual. So when the leader comes over and says, hey, we need your help to take back the House, it's a really good sign that they see, at a minimum, they see that, hey, this guy's getting a lot of support and we better get on board. So in that respect, it's really great because there are swing seats that are competitive between Democrats and Republicans that they're asking for the support on. But what it appears to me happen is that Leader McCarthy threw in there some really safe Republican seats. This is what they call a plus 32 seat, which means it's almost certainly going to be Republican in the general election. You got 10 different candidates out here, and he says, hey, I want you to endorse this one. And who knows whether they talked about it or not, but why did he need that endorsement? Well, part of the intrigue here is that the House Freedom Caucus or the House Freedom Fund had endorsed one of the other candidates, Jamie Berryhill, a little bit earlier. So you ask yourself, well, why in the world would Donald Trump endorse somebody that's way out in front, as though it was needed? Why would you do that in a primary? In the general, it makes perfect sense, but why would you do that in the primary? And of course, who knows what really happened? But what it looks to me like is this is a sort of palace intrigue of McCarthy versus House Freedom Caucus, and he's basically saying, I don't want anybody that ever challenges me. I want to get rid of these guys because I want complete control as a speaker.
Yeah, and he comes to the president and says, hey, we want to help you. Here's a list, and then let me slip a few of these guys in here who are personal opponents or personal allies versus a personal opponent, and it has nothing to do with anything that is related to the Trump agenda or the things that Trump is actually trying to accomplish.
Now, of course, is a guess. We don't really know what happened, but we do know that suddenly this came out of nowhere, right on the heels of Jeff Bezos and Michael Bloomberg. And so you think, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump didn't look and say, oh, well, my good friend Jeff and Michael are for Pfluger. I guess I should be.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now, so if folks here are looking at this race and they're saying, okay, I'm hearing all about this Pfluger guy because he's got all the money to spend. We've mentioned one of the candidate, Berryhill, who's got the backing of the House Freedom Fund and is kind of a bit of an alternative. But there are other candidates, viable candidates, in the race. Let's talk a little bit about those guys.
Well, so the next contender is a guy named Brandon Batch, who's from this area. He was a staffer on Capitol Hill for 5 years, and then he moved to Austin to work in a restaurant business. And then when the seat opened up, he moved back to run. And he's a very charismatic young guy, a lot of energy. And I was pretty hopeful from him, but he had a non-voting election and was asked about it and gave kind of a dodgy answer that contradicted publicly available data, which just looked to me like, too bad. That's a very swampy answer.
Yeah.
And then recently, this PAC that was supporting Pfluger, there's another PAC called Fired Up PAC that has an assistant treasurer that's the same name as on the with Honors PAC that started supporting Pfluger. I'm sorry, that started supporting Batch. And so you wonder, okay, now why does Batch, it was like $150,000 ad buy or something. So what's up with that? Do we now have to, is this such an important seat to the establishment leadership that they just got to make sure that it's one of their people that's controllable that comes in?
Or almost to the point that they want to make sure that they have two candidates in a 10-way race, you kind of expect a runoff. They get both candidates in the runoff, well, then it's a no-lose kind of situation. So that's Pfluger and Batch, and we've talked a little. Well, let's mention who Barry Hill is.
So Jamie Barry Hill's from Odessa. There's three candidates that I would say, if they were to get in a runoff, which I would, again, the big long shot right now, it's going to have to be a grassroots miracle if it's anything other than Pfluger. And if it's Pfluger Batch, those are the two possibilities. And I would say even if there's just a runoff at all, that's indication that the grassroots really started paying attention and going into action. But, if I was going to look and say, well, which of the other candidates could potentially defeat a Pfluger runoff, who would it be? Well, Barry Hill has the House Freedom Fund endorsement. He's from Odessa. J. Ross Lacey is from Midland, and he has probably the next most financial backing other than the top two.
And he's one of the He's been elected by the voters there.
And he was elected once before. He's a city councilman here, so he has some name ID and so forth. He's a young, energetic guy and has been a Republican Party activist for a long time, again, from an oil and gas family. So he would have some bona fides in terms of, I can go fight for the energy industry.
And I think he's got backing from Louis Gohmert. Right,
Louis Gohmert endorsed him, who's another House Freedom Caucus guy. So, both of those guys, I'd say, kind of have bona fides, and all three of these have said that they would join the House Freedom Caucus, which I suspect what's causing this incoming money from D.C.
Yeah, and then there's another candidate, Wes Verdell, who's got a lot of grassroots support.
Yeah, Wes Verdell is pretty interesting. He has basically almost no money, and he's a small businessman from Brady, and has just been a real clever guy, built a lot of grassroots support, and kind of came from nowhere with nothing. And he's also a veteran, and again, small business owner. He's from the southern part of the district, Brady, which is down by San Angelo. And so, you think, well, if he could build that kind of grassroots support, then, what could he do if he actually had some resources?
Sure.
So, and you would have two candidates then from the southern part of the district. So, which one of those three could really do it? It's kind of hard to say. But, the biggest population center of the three is probably Midland. So you probably give a nod to J. Ross Lacey in that respect. And the name ID and so forth, but all three of them are so far behind in the polls. Again, it'll be a grassroots miracle if anything other than Pfluger winning outright, or Pfluger and Batch, and having which of the leadership picked people, which of the establishment backed people can go in. Now, Tony, I'll say quickly, we've had plenty of experience to know you never know what somebody's going to do until they get there.
That's right.
And so none of these guys are, givens. It could be that Pfluger, because of all this controversy, realizes, hey, I got to be connected to the people back home. And he could go up there and tell those people, look, I'll go along to a point, but I represent the people back home. We don't know what the guy's going to do, right? And it could be that these guys who have pledged to be reformers go up and get plucked off. You know, we've seen it happen many times.
That's right.
All we can really do right now is respond to what we see in front of us.
Yeah. Well, I just think, it's important the grassroots have to be engaged if they want to influence who represents them. And then to your point, no matter what happens, you have to start from square one of saying, hey, this person doesn't have a record. We're not going to just assume that they're going to be good or assume that they're going to be bad. You have to continue, constantly stay vigilant. And then work to hold them accountable. I guess it's we're running out of time, but I'll tell folks go check out Tim's column. He is in the Midland Reporter Telegram column that was up there, kind of laying out all of this case and story. So if you missed something here, there's a lot more to read there. But thanks for shedding some light on this, Tim. It's a really important race for obviously folks in West Texas, but for all Texans.
Well, thank you, Tony, and I think you nailed it at the end. The engagement and letting whoever wins know we're watching you and we ultimately have the say-so who represents us is kind of the key to this whole outcome. So getting grassroots involvement and showing the pundits that it's not just the money, it's the engagement that matters. That has a lot of value. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to watch.
Thanks for coming on, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. The 2020 election will be here before we know it, and with every election comes candidates that need to be vetted and tested before we can entrust them with our vote. At TFR, we take that vetting process seriously. Any candidate seeking our endorsement must first fill out a comprehensive questionnaire, then sit for an interview with our staff. We then seek input from each candidate's would-be constituents before making a decision. To find out more about our endorsement process and view which candidates have made the cut, visit empowertexans.com/endorsements.
Well, as Jacob and I discussed earlier in the program, the violence in the city of Austin is really spiraling out of control. And Power Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan reflects on the causes of that crisis in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary.
Thanks to the radical leftist agenda of Austin's progressive city council, it's on the brink of being a failed city. It seems elections have consequences. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. A recent article by the Los Angeles Times cited U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development studies, which found that there were 25,848 homeless people in Texas, with 2,255 of them in Austin. Putting that in context, Texas' population is 28.7 million, and Austin's is 964,000. So while Austin has approximately 3.4% of the state's population, it has 8.7% of the state's vagrants. The city's big spending, funded through property taxes, makes housing unaffordable. Add on green initiatives and other leftist restrictions on property use, and the costs escalate higher. By adopting policies attractive to vagrants like camping in public spaces, it shouldn't be a surprise that more of them would make their way to Austin. The people of Austin have only themselves to blame. They voted for leftist and progressive city council members who campaigned on doing leftist and progressive things. What Austin is experiencing is merely the very predictable result. Nothing says progress like doing hard drugs under a used tarp on the sidewalk in front of the police station after stealing a woman's purse. Congratulations, that's what you've been voting for. As the vagrant population in downtown Austin becomes more violent, businesses are publicly panicking. But will that translate into action at the polls? Meanwhile, if you live in Austin, you shouldn't visit downtown. If you're planning on visiting or attending a convention there, you should rethink those plans. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I've got for you this week. As I mentioned, early voting is underway. You need to go out and get involved in elections. And if you need information on that, go check out endorsements and stories about the campaigns going on at TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.